It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, losing or leaving a job can be disorienting, especially when that job has been a big part of your identity. A Wisconsin psychologist joins the show to help separate who we are from what we do for a living. First, the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan passed the U.S. House of Representatives on Saturday with all but two Democrats voting in favor, all Republicans opposing it. The package includes $1,400 checks to many Americans, extra unemployment benefits, funding aimed at helping schools reopen, and money for vaccine distribution and COVID-19 testing. The House version included a $15 minimum wage law that probably won't end up being part of the final bill, which Democrats plan to get through the Senate using the budget reconciliation process. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about what is in this relief bill? Are there changes you'd like to see? Are you disappointed that it's moving along pretty much party lines rather than a bipartisan way? Are you looking for something to happen fast? And would this help your family or business? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephen Smith is a professor of social sciences and political science at Washington University in St. Louis. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you.
What stands out to you as the most important parts of this newest COVID-19 relief package?
Well, the most obvious thing is to is the economic stimulus that'll come in the form of the $1,400 per person stimulus checks for those who are middle and lower income. And obviously, for those who are on unemployment, the extension of the federal supplement beyond March all the way through August, and an increase in the size of that supplement from $300 to $400 per week will make a big difference. I think many liberals will also point to the expansion of the child tax credit and the increase in the child care tax credit, which will make it easier for many families and is a major anti-poverty move on the part of the Democrats.
One of the big arguments, of course, with a $1.9 trillion package is this too much money given the scope of the problem we're up against? What do you think about the scale of this proposed relief package?
Well, you know, I'm not a macroeconomist, but, you know, I read what my friends say, and I trust what many of them say. And their general view is that it's not too large. The economic risks that we've taken and continue to suffer because of the health crisis warrant a big federal stimulus, and this certainly is that. Their view is that interest rates are extremely low, unemployment and the number of underemployed is extremely high. So this is the time to make some necessary investments to get our economy back on track. I think even liberal economists might prefer that some of the funding be targeted differently. But I think most of them would say that their differences with some of the details of the bill are far less important than getting this done quickly.
One argument,
and that's one of the issues here, is that they really need to get it done quickly. We need the stimulus checks and especially the unemployment supplement. Because people are in trouble and they need it very soon.
And one argument from Republicans has been, okay, yeah, some of this might be needed quickly, but some of this isn't going to come into place very soon. And I want to give a listen to Representative Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin talking about the bill last week.
And we saw this with the last bill that worked through Congress. We haven't spent half the money that went through the last bill. We have to be targeted and focused. And I think there's a lot of Republicans, myself included, who are willing to do more to make sure that vaccines get widely distributed, are willing to do more to make sure that hospitals have the cost covered that they're taking on for administering the vaccine. And that's the best way we can actually open up this economy.
And that's a common argument from Republicans saying, hey, a lot of the last package hasn't been spent yet. Defenders of past provisions and the new ones say, well, that's because some of it's, you know, unemployment, for example, that wasn't supposed to be spent right away. It's supposed to be predictable for a period of time. What do you make of that concern?
Well, you got that right, Rob. You know, I have two responses. One is that we went for months with the Republicans in Congress refusing to allow a bill to come up in the Senate. And without offering any serious proposals of their own while they were still in the majority in that chamber. So finally, we got a bill in December, well after the election. And of course, it was highly compromised and didn't do quite enough. And we're only a couple of months away from that. But the need is still there. At least that's the, I think, very credible argument on the Democratic side. So part of the issue here is if those were serious concerns for the Republicans, they should have been raised in the summer and a part of a more deliberative, rational process than is possible when we get to this very late date in the process. And, you know, it's still the case that the House Republicans and the Wisconsin congressman is one of them did not propose a comprehensive alternative of their own. So the time has passed really for those kinds of complaints. It's time now that the unemployment benefit extension is about to expire to get on with passing legislation.
Talking to Stephen Smith from Washington University in St. Louis. So with the latest on a new COVID relief package passed the U.S. House. Now it is the Senate's turn, probably going to something is likely to pass, probably along party lines. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Susan is with us in Milwaukee. Susan, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to bring up, Susan?
Well, the idea of what the needs were before, the needs are greater, not less. Now, for every single solitary day that they wait to get this moving, we end up with Lord knows how many additional businesses, small businesses that supposedly Republicans love, yeah, right, that are gone. They're gone. They will not be able to come back. They've done everything they could to hang on. All of us have done everything that we could to hang on. This is just so ridiculous that we're still talking about it 5 weeks after the Biden administration came on board, and we're still saying, well, soon, or, and da-da-da-da-da.
Susan, thanks a lot. I take your point. And Steve, Susan worried in particular about the small businesses. There are provisions, I believe, another, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, $25 billion, for example, for restaurants in the package. What does this mean for small businesses, the ones that Susan's worried about to hang on by a thread?
Well, that's right. That's about the restaurants and bar support for those that lost revenue during the pandemic makes up about half of the small business programs that'll be a part of that are a part of this package. There are a variety of other grants and support for small business that add up to about another $25 billion. And many of those small businesses are desperate. Susan is certainly quite right that once they close, it's very difficult for them to reopen. In addition to that, there are many people who own small rental properties, and they're finding that their tenants cannot pay their rent. This includes rental assistance. And there are many people who are facing, because of their unemployment status or other losses of income, are struggling to meet their mortgage payments. And this bill includes substantial emergency mortgage payment assistance. So there simply is a wide variety of provisions. This is a very large, comprehensive bill. It is important to those people that this get passed quickly. That's one reason the Democrats are unloading some provisions in the bill that many would like to keep in there in order to get quick action on it. Right now, it looks like the Senate might even act on it on Wednesday or Thursday of this week. But if they considered lengthy amendments or substantial modifications, that would be delayed.
Thanks for the call, Susan. We'll go to Ken now in Exelon. Ken, hi.
Thursday of this week, but if they consider the link.
Ken, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go for it, Ken. What did you want to say?
Yeah, I wanted to say that I do not believe that handing money out like the elite have handed out to each other forever and trickled it down to the rest of us is what we need. We need people to service and work in their community to take care of problems that we have. I don't want free money. I'll take it if they give it to me, but I really don't want it.
Ken, thanks for the call. And that's been a general response, Steve, especially for the stimulus checks, especially for people not in that dire straits, the concern that Ken has about giving out free money to people and the impact that could have.
Well, I think there are a lot of people who would like to see it focused better than it is. The model, of course, is the model that was adopted by the White House of Donald Trump and the Senate Republicans last May, and that is to simply send out checks and to do it quickly. That model never changed, and there never was any serious debate about changing it. I think there should have been that debate, but that debate was blocked over the summer and fall, largely because the Senate Republicans refused to act on legislation. We could have had a far more rational process, but this is what we were left with.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Steve Smith, professor of social sciences and political science at Washington University, looking at the $1.9 trillion relief bill that passed the U.S. House this weekend, moving on to the Senate as soon as this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would things in this relief package benefit you, your family, or your business? Are there changes you'd like to see to the bill? Do you think it is too much spending on top of the previous packages? And what questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Steve Smith, professor of social sciences and political science at Washington University, looking at the COVID-19 relief bill that passed the U.S. House this weekend, headed to the Senate in the coming days. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, before we go back to our callers, you mentioned possible changes coming to this bill in the Senate. They have a very narrow margin, one vice president, basically, the Democrats do. What kind of changes could still be in the works at this stage?
Well, the biggest change from the House bill, of course, is the announcement over the weekend that the Democrats will drop the $15 an hour minimum wage provision. That apparently violates the Senate rule that all elements of a reconciliation bill, and this is being treated as a budget bill called reconciliation, all elements of such a bill have to be related to the budget, that is to either revenue or spending. But since an increase in the minimum wage affects mainly the private sector, it's considered to have only an incidental effect on the federal budget and therefore can't be included. To get around that, they've been thinking about creating some tax incentives for businesses to move up their minimum wage. But over the weekend, they decided that was a little too complicated to do in short order. So they've dropped that for the time being. For a similar reason, the House decided not to pursue an eviction moratorium. The president has extended one that was in place when he came into office, and the House Democrats thought they might put that in the bill to extend it for a longer period, put it into law. But they dropped that, too, because it's a regulation that would be imposed on the private sector and have only minor implications for the federal budget. So there are a number of things in here that you might consider to be important that could be in here that you might consider important that they've decided to drop. And the most obvious is the $15 minimum wage.
Go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Kate is with us in Oshkosh. Kate, hello.
Yeah. I just was going to be talking something about the other previous caller had talked about not necessarily wanting the money because they didn't need it. I myself am a teacher, and I'm lucky enough to have kept my job. But what my partner and I did with my stimulus check, one, he ended up getting laid off, but I myself, we reinvested into a local business, and we also made home repairs that might not have necessarily worked on our previous budget. I've also heard of other people donating to either food banks or other charities in our area if they didn't feel like they necessarily needed their, not refund check, the stimulus check that they had previously had before. So just another thought to put out there in case you didn't necessarily think that you deserved it, but you wanted to make sure it got into the hands of people that did actually need the stimulus check, because although it was enough for some, it was definitely not enough for others.
Okay, thanks a lot for that call. And that was one of the arguments, Steve, for the stimulus check. Even if it didn't all go to people who desperately needed money, the hope was that this flood of money into a lot of families, like Kate's, would go out to a local business, a local contractor, that kind of thing. The fear was people couldn't go out and spend their money at restaurants or travel, so it might just sit in a savings account. Can you talk about how we weigh that that argument versus the no, only give it to people who need it argument?
Right. Well, you know, it's economics 101. Even if the money is just put in your bank account, it's there for the banker to lend to small businesses to help them build their small businesses and keep people employed. The money doesn't literally sit in a mattress. It goes back into the economy, whether you put it into your bank account or spend it right away. So at a time when the economy desperately needed a boost, partly because so many people were unemployed or underemployed, so many people had dropped out of the job market altogether, so many businesses were in danger. Putting that money back in the economy, whether or not any particular individual is as deserving as someone else, putting the money back into the economy was the main purpose. Obviously, some people desperately needed it, and in Kate's case, it was put to good use.
Let's go back to our callers now. Thanks for that call, Kate. John is with us in Boaz. John, hello.
Hi. It sounds like our economy is in a desperate shape, because how are we going to pay for this now three bonuses? Because our interest rates are extremely low, but still we have to borrow money to pay these incentives.
John, thanks a lot for that call. That's a concern, Steve. We talked to the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget last week. They're in support of some of the spending, about a third of it, I think, but not all of it. Concerns about mounting deficits in the overall debt.
Well, sure. And, you know, we have a huge economy that is struggling a bit. But I think most macroeconomists think that we can handle this this debt burden. Right now, we'd be borrowing the money from the private sector at a very, very low interest rate. So now is the time, actually, for the federal government to be investing in the economy, because money's as inexpensive now as it's likely to be in the future. A second concern would be how this much money back into the economy would affect inflation. And because so many people are underemployed and so many businesses are in trouble, the inflation worry really isn't too great. Of course, the same issue was raised last spring, and it was raised in the stimulus package back in 2009 when we were dealing with the Great Recession. And we did not face any significant increase in inflation or interest rates as a result of those efforts. So for the time being, the economy, this is the right time to be borrowing. Whether it's too much or too little, we can argue about that, but this is a good time to be borrowing and investing.
Thanks for the call. I'll go to John now in Mount Horeb. John, hi.
Hi there. Great conversation. Thanks for doing this. I'm just always kind of what would it take for our nation's government to try to get major corporations like Amazon to actually pay taxes? And I feel like that, just that company alone, to be putting money back into this whole experiment known as, you know, the American idea. I feel like that could take care of so much in terms of you know, deficit, and it could help pay back whatever money was given to us. I mean, we're all sitting here waiting for a $1,400 check, and that's, for some people, that's, you know, 1 month's rent. I mean, that's really not going to do much.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Just got a couple of minutes left. Steve, John, looking for more taxes on big companies like Amazon in particular.
Well, what we're seeing from many people like John is action on a much, much larger policy agenda, undoing the Trump tax cuts, which benefited the largest corporations the most, is one item on the Democrats' long policy agenda. Obviously, civil rights and election reform is another issue. Getting back to the minimum wage is another issue. Doing something about climate change and improving education are other issues. So there's a big agenda here, and the president and the Congress, I think quite reasonably, decided to make a response to the economic and health crisis their number one priority. And of course, there are a number of things tucked into this bill that are only tangentially related to that crisis, but can be neatly included in a budget measure like this one. So there are a number of issues, including tax reform, that is on their agenda, but they've put it on a back burner for now.
Thanks for that call. Steve, I want to take our last minute and look at the politics here. Polls show a lot of support for the general concept of this COVID package. Republicans, like Minority Leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, saying, yeah, but you got to look at the details here. There's a lot of stuff you won't like. So what do you make of the partisan politics over this in just our last minute?
It works pretty well for the president and the Democrats. Its popularity is pretty clear. The Republicans certainly are addressing the concerns of their core Republican constituents, but middle of the road Americans think that we need to do something and to do it quickly. And so I think the political winner will be the Democrats and the president, which shows up not only in the polls on this particular legislation, but in the high approval rating for President Biden.
We'll leave it there. Steve, thanks for joining us again.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Stephen Smith is a professor of political science and social sciences at Washington University. He joined us for a look at the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. That's moving on to a Senate vote, quite possibly soon, after passing the House this weekend. Coming up after the news, we lose a lot when we lose a job or leave a workplace, including sometimes a sense of identity. We'll talk to a Wisconsin psychologist about getting through those transitional times. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show, UW-Madison soccer star Rose Lavelle talks about her standout performance in the World Cup, the upcoming Olympics, and concerns about equal pay for men and women in the sport. That's tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, you lose a lot when you lose a job, reliable income, health insurance, and other benefits. But one thing we don't always think about losing is a sense of identity that can come along with a job. Our jobs are what we do, often the first thing a person learns about us. And when we find ourselves without it, finding that sense of self can take a little more work and reflection. That's been a big issue with job losses during the pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like we put a lot of our identity or sense of self in our work, our careers? Have you experienced feeling a little lost in that way after losing a job, changing careers, taking some time off? In addition to the possible economic hardship, of course, that comes along with that. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mindy Thompson is a professor of counseling psychology and director of the Work and Wellness Lab at UW-Madison. She's a licensed and registered health service psychologist. Mindy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Can you talk about this aspect of loss that can go along with losing a job? I mean, obviously, there's the financial hardship, but talk about this identity that we can lose when we leave a workplace behind.
Yeah, it's just as you said, that there's so much of our identities wrapped up in what we do. You know, oftentimes the first thing, you know, within the first 5 minutes of meeting somebody new, a common question is, what do you do for work, right? What do you do? And it really signifies how in our culture, especially where we are in our times of what it, how much work means to us, how much we tend to wrap ourselves up in what it is that we do for work, whether that's work within the home or work out of the home. And it really does, as you mentioned, speak to the importance of understanding and paying attention to this aspect in the midst of such hardship, right? So there's so many of us that are struggling. We're in a time of pretty severe upheaval in terms of levels of unemployment and underemployment, and folks who are transitioning from one job to another or currently out of work. And so that's an important thing for us to be keeping in mind, that it's not just about the financial components, which absolutely are essential, but to think about the other ways that work disruptions can impact our lives.
So for somebody in this situation, and this could be somebody who's lost a job involuntarily, of course, being laid off, somebody who's changing a career of their own accord, or maybe somebody who just retired, how do we start to define ourselves when we realize we don't have that job and it was a big part of what we thought of who we were?
Yeah, it's really important to think about ourselves as sort of whole selves, right? We have the selves that are connected to the work that we do, and that work, if that's paid work, then it's connected to how that meets our needs for financial survival and for power. But it's also really important to think about the other needs that work fulfills. So the social connections that we get from work, the routines and the habits that are part of our working day. And when those things are gone, and when they're not available in the same way, it really does require some adjustment. We have to think about how can I get those needs met in other ways? What do I need to set up for myself to make sure that I have an opportunity to connect with others? How do I establish some new habits or rituals that are going to be important to provide some structure for my day, or the new way that I'm perceiving myself? If I've, you know, as you said, if I've transitioned into retirement, I still need to figure out, what does that then mean for my life from day to day, from moment to moment, how I engage in different activities, how I interact with different people and gain social connection.
That's a really interesting point you just brought up. It's not just about identity, but the structure work can bring. We build our work days around work, and in a lot of ways our weekends, whether they happen on a Saturday or Sunday or whenever, around that work routine. How can we build a structure into our lives during stretches when we don't have a job for whatever reason?
Yeah, it's really important to think about, you know, and sometimes I work with clients and it's just about what might seem like really basic things like getting out of bed at a certain time, right? Maybe taking a shower, getting dressed, even if you're not leaving the house or your apartment. Sometimes it's about thinking through what parts of your day you might want to, if you're a person who's looking for a new job and actively in that phase of trying to gain employment, it's thinking about how can you structure some blocks of time in your day that you're going to spend to engage in that work, right? If you're somebody who's not in a position where you're looking for a new job, it's how do you start to think about what might be ways to structure in other forms of leisure, or maybe it's forms of taking care of yourself, or maybe it's ways in which you're giving back or you're contributing in a different way than you were contributing when you had a job.
We're talking to Mindy Thompson, professor of counseling psychology and director of the Work and Wellness Lab at UW-Madison. We're talking about our jobs and ourselves, our identities, and what we lose when we leave work for whatever reason. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Has this ever happened to you? Is this happening to you right now? You have left a job because you were laid off, because you retired, whatever the reason. And it left you with questions about who you are, what your identity was, what you do with your time during the day. And how did you answer those questions? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Now, Mindy, I've read some psychologists who say, you know, the conversation in some ways shouldn't be starting when we leave a job. Maybe we need to be thinking about our relationship to our workplace, even when we're at a job. How do we start to build boundaries so that we're not feeling like we're defined, you know, 80-90% about by what we do for a living?
Yeah, that's such an important piece, right? That we want to not, when we no longer have work, that's the time where we want to pay attention to these things. But instead, we want to really start to expand sort of the whole focus of our lives, right? The rest of our lives outside of our work lives, even when we are in a position of employment, that we have a space to define ourselves in different ways, right? To figure out what are the things, the interests, the hobbies that I might have, what are the leisure interests I might pursue, what are ways that I can build a connection with my family and my community, what are ways in which I might be able to contribute to or give back to others, so that we aren't sort of stuck in this place where the only thing that brings meaning or the only thing that brings joy into our lives is our work.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. David is with us in Lincoln. David, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, David. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm calling because for 25 years, I had a pretty long career as a massage therapist in private practice. And about 4 years ago, I decided to make a change. And I changed from I had been a volunteer EMT on an ambulance service locally here in northern Wisconsin, and I went back to school so that I could become a paramedic, and I got a job working for a local fire department here.
Wow.
Professionally as a firefighter paramedic, and I guess my comment is. The most difficult part of that transition for me was going from working at a job where I really had a high degree of mastery and, you know, the skills involved with the job. I was really good at that. And then going to a job where I basically was learning all of these skills all the time. And I'm still learning them, you know, as I go. There's a lot to, you know, patient care on an ambulance, and there's a lot to fighting fire. But it was the psychologically hard part for me was going from knowing what I was doing to having to continuously learn new skills.
Wow. So, scary and exciting, it sounds like to me, David, at the same time.
Sure. Definitely. Yeah.
David, thanks a lot for that call. Mindy, I love what he said there about, you know, his old job. He had that sense of mastery of the things he was doing, and he gave that up, and he's learning now. But that is something we can lose when we leave a job, the sense that, hey, this is something. There's something out there that I'm really good at.
Yes. Yes, that sense of self-efficacy, the confidence that we know how to do something and we're contributing and making a difference in some ways. And David, as you mentioned, when that's gone or when that's changed in a significant way as you took on this new position and put yourself in back into that learner role and that learner mindset, it really speaks to the ways in which it's so important to be expanding our identities, right? And that doesn't always feel easy in the moment. And as you know, the exciting part of it is you are transitioning and really learning and gaining a whole new set of skills and mastering a whole new set of skills.
David, thanks so much for sharing your story. We're talking to Mindy Thompson about how we tie our identities to our work and what that means if we lose a job or leave a job expectedly or unexpectedly. Mindy's a professor of counseling psychology, director of the Work and Wellness Lab at UW-Madison. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a story to share from your past or your present about leaving work, whether you wanted to or not, and what that meant for your sense of who you were and what you did with your day? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, take some more of your calls coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Mindy Thompson, professor of counseling psychology and director of the Work and Wellness Lab at UW-Madison. We're talking about how our work can shape our identity and what happens when we lose a job and need to recreate our sense of self. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Kim is with us in Madison. Kim, hello.
Hi, Rob.
Hi. What do you want to tell us about, Kim?
I'm a nurse, and about not quite 3 years ago, I retired, and I thought, what am I going to do if I'm not a nurse? Who will I be? And now I feel like I'm so happy I was a nurse, but I'm so happy that I don't have to care for people anymore. I can take care of myself a little bit.
That's great. What's your answer to the question, Kim? Because I'm curious for my own future. What did you decide you were now that you're not a nurse anymore?
I'm still a nurse, I guess. But you know, it's like I see my grandkids. Obviously, I don't see them now, but you know, like before the pandemic, I got to spend more time with them and do things with my daughter and travel with my husband because he travels a lot for work. And my mom had passed away in this amount of time, and so I take care of my dad. So I do take care of people, but not in the same way.
Kim, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Mindy, I hear Kim, and I love this, and I've seen people recommend this. She didn't define herself now by nouns, but by verbs. She's traveling. She's spending more time, pre-pandemic, spending more time with family and things like that.
Yes. And Kim, I love the, you know, you were taking care of other people and you made a shift to take care of more of yourself and of the folks around you and your family, and really being able to reinvent sort of your sense of identity around that caretaker role, but in a way that feels like you're able to give back to yourself in the process and nurture those relationships that are really important to you.
Kim, thanks a lot for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Eric next in Beaver Dam. Eric, hi.
How are we doing today?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Eric?
So I worked at a motorcycle dealership in Beaver Dam for 23 years. It was a family-owned business that my grandfather owned since 1958. And due to many reasons, we closed the store. So it was definitely my identity. We were obviously a motorcycle dealership, and it completely changed my outlook on what to do next. Because after I did this for so long, I was looking for a different opportunity, which I did find shortly before we closed. But I now sell insulated concrete forms and for a company called Stronghold ICF. And I'm embracing the fact that I don't have to go to a establishment every day and say punch a clock to get in and get a paycheck. But at least now I have not necessarily a different identity. I'm still Eric, but definitely a different drive and definitely learning every day, as this is a completely different career path.
Eric, thanks a lot. He's still Eric, Mindy, Eric says, even though he's doing something different.
Yeah, I love that, Eric, that keeping connected to who you are and you as a person. And so often we can lose that when we become too wrapped up in our work, which unfortunately is what our society tends to teach us and condition us to do. And just love the fact that you're finding ways to have a job identity that feels a little bit maybe more meaningful for you, or that you're not just kind of punching that clock, and to use your words.
Thanks a lot, Eric. Glad you found a new line of work. We're talking to Mindy Thompson from UW-Madison, professor of counseling psychology there, looking at how our identity can be wrapped up in our job, and then what happens when we leave that job because we get laid off or we retire, whatever the case may be. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Roger in Grantsford. Roger, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? I love the topic of the show. It's been on my mind a lot. Mm-hmm. I was a machinist in a factory here in town for almost 25 years. And due to some medical injuries, I lost my job. And then I decided, I'll start farming and doing stuff. And I did odd jobs on the side, but I lost the structure of being on someplace at some time. And now Mama says, well, how did you ever get anything done? Can't get nothing done now. It's like I lost my whole time thing, my time frame.
And Roger, are you figuring out ways to build that structure into your day now? Or is this still a work in progress for you?
It's still a work in progress. I haven't been there since 2006. And I worked out of, like I said, out of the 23 years was night shift. Ooh. graveyard shift for 23 years. That destroys your body and your. I don't sleep. I wander around at night like a vampire. No, it's like, and then try to farm and whatever, and it's been tough. You know, and then the medical issues and stuff, but it's terrible to try to get back any kind of structure of time. You don't have no one to call to or no one to answer to but yourself. And if you don't get it done, the only one you can blame is yourself.
Well, Roger, good luck. We're pulling for you to find that structure and get a routine and sleep at night, too. So, Roger, a big hit there, Mindy. The job, the nighttime schedule, which is, after doing it for years, really hard to break out of. And again, a big part of who he was. What do you think?
Yeah, Roger, thanks for sharing. And I hear that this has been a really tough transition. And thanks for bringing up the medical piece, right? I think that's so important that when we have injuries and illnesses that we're managing, that the impact that has on our ability to work. And it's such an important, certainly right now, we're seeing that more and more. We know that a lot of folks are struggling in this space. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that you're finding some other ways to kind of dabble in some new interests, right? Getting into farming and finding structure in those ways. I also think, you know, maybe one thing I'd encourage you to do is that habit of staying up and being a night owl and actually having your body have adapted to that after so many years, to start to find small ways to break that habit, right? And so what are some ways that you might be able to do things at night to get to sleep a little sooner, but also what are some things that you could give yourself to structure into those nighttime routines, even if you are up, instead of just sort of feeling like you're walking aimlessly? Are there things you could decide you're going to do during that time?
Roger, thanks again for calling. Time for one more caller, I think. Annie is with us in Appleton. Annie, hi. I think we might have lost Annie. Let's try Mike in Oregon. Mike, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Great topic today. It really hits close to home in my heart. I lost my job with a large corporation in a technical sales position right as COVID was hitting. And, man, was it difficult to find a position. You can't go in and meet with people. You have to do things online. I'm a little older, so, you know, all this technique and all that, I left. I got some help. But it's very stressful, and I really, you know, advise people to save some money, because you never know when a rainy day is going to come. Blessing in some ways, because working for a huge corporation, it was very difficult and stressful in itself. Now I'm working for a smaller family-owned company, and the stress level has just been 99% less, and I'm just so much happier. But, what a pull over here.
That's fine, Mike. Thank you so much for sharing that. Mindy, I think that's a great perspective. It was stressful and tough, understandably. It is possible, Mike tells us, to come out maybe in a better position after you work through this.
Yeah, and Mike, I appreciate your sense of perseverance, right? And the beginning of the pandemic is a really tough time to have lost your job. And so sticking it out and finding something that it sounds like is a much better fit for you overall in your level of stress from day to day that you're able to have in your new company compared to your prior one.
Thanks for that call. And Mindy, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Mindy Thompson, a professor of counseling psychology and director of the Work and Wellness Lab at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's also a licensed and registered health service psychologist. We've been talking about how our work can be a big part of our identity and what happens then when we leave a job or a career by choice or otherwise. Thank you so much for sharing all of your stories. And you can keep sharing stories, by the way, over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know if you have been through this yourself recently or in the past, how you got through it, if you're still working on it, and how you, reinvented yourself after losing a job that had defined you, maybe for, as some of our callers did, for decades. Again, that's the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, a new COVID vaccine is hitting the market. It's expected to boost the speed of the overall vaccination effort. We'll get the latest on vaccines and who may not be getting them as soon as they need them. And state lawmakers from both parties are working on a plan to have ranked choice voting here in Wisconsin. Two of them joined the show to explain how that would work and what it would mean for voters. That and more tomorrow on Central Time. Are you looking for a museum exhibit that makes you feel better about yourself? A lot of times you go to a museum, you see things that were really well done, an awesome painting, a sculpture that lasted hundreds of years, an invention that changed the world. Who can live up to that? So how about this? A museum exhibit devoted to failures. As reported by Smithsonian Magazine, a design museum in France has an online exhibit called When Design Flops. It includes pieces from the Museum of Failure in Sweden, which is a thing, featured items at the exhibit, some real products like the short-lived DeLorean car of the 1980s and the Google Glass internet goggles from a few years back. It also features some artistic items designed intentionally as failures, like a super curvy ping pong table or a double champagne glass that's impossible to drink out of without spilling. The goal of the exhibit is not to mock failures, but to celebrate them as necessary steps in innovation. Plus, the DeLorean gave us the time machine in Back to the Future. The Google Glass gave us mean jokes about people who wore the Google Glass. And the curvy ping pong table looks like a lot of fun. I would like to nominate the first car I had regular access to, a family hand-me-down Renault Alliance, which actually worked pretty well and had a lot of pickup when it started. It often didn't start, even when you replaced a battery and the starter and more. Design failures for you. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.